All right, Nico, so you are a nicotine expert. I gotta ask, is Nico a stage name so that it aligns with the word nicotine?
No, only just serendipitous.
That's super funny that you ended up, you know, finding this particular niche and that's your name. It's kind of like when you think about like old names, like your name's Joe Shoemaker, and somewhere back in your family line, your great, 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 great grandfather made shoes. He was a cobbler or whatever. Yeah, I think maybe in my line, I kind of share the same thing actually. Now I think about it, story, like I tell stories and I share stories with people. So that's the first thing I wanted to ask you. What got you into nicotine as a health and life enhancing molecule?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started off in my past life as an electrical engineer and didn't really resonate with me. Found it kind of boring. Really got passionate about health and I had these migraines. And so it became almost like a necessity. You know, it started coming out that, you know, there might be even like brain damage occurring with each migraine. So it's like, okay, I got to nip this in the bud. And to me, you know, the conventional route just wasn't an option. It's like, hey, clearly, you know, I got to start this health journey. I got to figure it out. So I started doing a ton of research, you know, started going to the chiropractor and getting my skull adjusted and, you know, taking a bunch of magnesium supplements and all sorts of stuff, tested, you know, cut out seed oils, you know, covered a lot of the basics and they went away, you know, having them had a migraine in years, which is just amazing because they're, if you've had them, they're the worst.
What's the difference between a migraine and a regular headache?
A normal headache, which, you know, most people have had, you know, your head hurts and it's just not that, you know, it's not that big of a deal. A migraine is a wildly oppressive, hours long, for some people, days long. It's a headache, but often it comes with nausea. For me, violent, vomiting.
Really?
Oh yeah. No, it was just like, I was getting punched in the head and I was super nauseous. Thankfully, they didn't last as long for me. But a lot of one of the key indicators is you'll often have an aura or something like this beforehand. It's almost like something's going on with the blood flow in your brain where like it drops off and then comes in super hot. So I would have these terrible auras to the point that it was almost like stroke symptoms. I'd get numbness in my hands. I'd have even some errors in my speech, which was terrifying. So I would know what I was trying to say. And the words just won't come out. Like either the wrong words, wrong order. And, you know, it was really scary. I scared my family, scared myself. And, you know, obviously it was a major wake up call. And in a lot of ways, I'm grateful for it because it got me on this path. And it also taught me how to suffer. So, you know, that's one of those things that you aren't necessarily, grateful for at the time because suffering isn't the best. But, that was a lot of the worst suffering in my life, you know, and at the end of the day, it's not that bad, right? But the temporal suffering of migraines is not nothing. So that got me on this path. And then I became super passionate about health. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to be an engineer. I want to do something a lot cooler, a lot more interesting than that. So I went and got my MBA, started working for my dad's business, which conveniently enough was in the health food space. So started learning about specialty sweeteners, supplements, specialty supplements, mineral supplements. Kind of went down that rabbit hole and then, you know, got into the biohacking space, did some crazy fast, did my cold water plunges and all that. Did a little bit of crazy ones. I would do like a dry fast and sauna. And then of course I had my Oura ring. So it was kind of freaky. One time I got my heart rate down to 34 beats a minute. And I was like, oh wow, either I'm really healthy or this is really stupid. So I like to do fun stuff like that. And then, you know, one of the things that cat popping up in the literature, being the huge nerd that I am, was nicotine. And then I heard about it from people that, you know, you've talked to, Dave Asprey and Ben Greenfield, you know, people like them, definitely, you know, I was following them and seeing what they're doing. So I was like, cool, well, I want to try nicotine and, you know, I want to see if I can get anything out of it. Because I had never used any nicotine prior to coming up with this, really. I tried like some toothpicks. I was like the only product I could find that kind of met my orthorexic standards in terms of ingredients. But it made me realize that there's this major problem which is the delivery methods for nicotine are not so good. So I was like, well, what could we do? So I started, you know, making up what I affectionately call crack rocks in the kitchen. Or basically like using old school confectionery techniques to like mix it with nicotine and see what I could do. And eventually it evolved into this.
Epic. Well, I love your perspective on suffering and discomfort. I think that many of us go through challenges, and obviously when we're in the midst of it before we found the solution, it can be pretty oppressive and depressing, right? But then when we get past it, oftentimes we've changed our entire way of living as a result of solving that problem. And there's no way to know, but it's interesting to look at, to me, how many other problems I might have had down the road and how many other degrees or varieties of suffering I might have experienced had I not had that one initial one that set me on the path, right? So like if you didn't have the migraines, you might have just been an NPC and just normal person, you know, eating regular groceries, regular food, whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It could have been one of those 50% of men that get cancer or whatever, right?
Yeah. So, and then you could have had a lot of other problems down the road.
100%.
As an electrical engineer, I'm curious, were you like on job sites, like around a lot of electricity?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So originally, I did a little bit of time working in San Diego in defense. I had problems with that personally, ethically. So I was like, I'm not going to work in defense. So I went and switched over to the utility space. It's like, okay, I'm providing a necessary service. I was in Arizona at the time. It's like, yeah, people are going to die if the air conditioning turns off. I think this is a good, like a relatively noble path, which to me was really important. I've been in huge switch yards. You know, I've been to nuclear plants. I've been to all over them. You know, I remember going to one switch yard in general, and you know, I was with a bunch of people and they're like, oh, let's go stand underneath the reactor. And, you know, it's with women. So like their hair would stand, you know, 2 feet over their head because the magnetic field is so powerful. Oh, and I was like the loser health nerd. And I was, you know, a mile away. I'm exaggerating, but like looking at them, you're like, you guys are crazy. That is a very powerful magnetic force that you guys are walking into. So yeah, no, I've been around probably too much electrical equipment, but
I wonder if there was any correlation between the migraines and all of that EMF exposure.
I think it happened before that. You know, I wasn't okay in the field that much. So I've had a number of concussions. So I think that's more than likely where it started. You get a few concussions and then there appears to be some genetic predisposition as well that's there as well.
Got it. One of the things I've contemplated when it comes to nicotine and also caffeine is that over history, so many of the great works of art have been created under the influence of those two substances. And even thinking about like this country is essentially built by people that, I mean, the infrastructure of the country is essentially built by people that smoke cigarettes and drink coffee. You know, and I don't know how many great artists, like how many great compositions in classical music or, you know, Renaissance paintings or things that have really stood the test of time as great contributions by human beings. There's no way really to quantify it, but logic would dictate that a lot of that has been assisted. Great works of literature, for example, right? I mean, when you think of the archetypal timeless author, they're sitting there like smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee as they work on the typewriter and produce their opus, you know? So there's like definitely a historical precedent for both caffeine and nicotine. And I think the problem, one of the problems, and I'll get your take on this, is that if you look at the history of lung cancer, for example, prior to around World War II, I mean, human beings have been smoking tobacco probably for all of recorded and pre-recorded history. But there was virtually no lung cancer until we started growing tobacco commercially with fertilizers and then spraying it with pesticides. And then all of a sudden you have this massive wave of lung cancer from cigarette smokers. Have you looked into that correlation? Like, is smoking tobacco actually that bad for you if it's organic tobacco that you grew yourself in your homestead or something versus commercial R.J. Reynolds pesticide-laden, chemical-laden tobacco?
Yes, I strongly suspect that's the case. You know, when you go to the grocery store and you see, you know, the cigarettes locked up, there's a big warning sign above it that says, you know, all these companies literally designed to make these products more addictive. You know, they're just like big food. They're formulated to be as addictive as possible. And then there's also a number of crazy regulations that contributed to making them worse. But there's something like 600 additives that you're allowed to add to tobacco. None of them have to be disclosed. So, you know, you don't see the ingredients on the package. Yep. You know, so for example, light cigarettes, they added pyrazines, hypothetically to make them more addictive. But, you know, one of the big things that's contributed, in addition to the arsenic, the pesticides, the rat poison, all this stuff, you know, to maximize a crop, is in the United States, flame retardants are required to be in cigarettes. So you cannot buy cigarettes in the US without flame retardants. So
flame retardants?
Yep, because a few people were smoking cigarettes, you know, sitting in their lazy boy and they fell asleep and they burnt their house down.
Oh, so they don't keep burning.
They won't keep burning. So unless you were buying, you know, your raw organic tobacco leaves and chopping it up yourself and rolling it, then yeah, I think you're gonna have more problems than otherwise. I mean, smoke in itself is still carcinogenic. So I think limiting smoke exposure is wise. But modern cigarettes are definitely worse. I mean, again, it's just like the correlation with big food.
What about the paper? I've always wondered about rolling papers, because when you look at rolling papers, which I haven't used in a very long time, but I used to roll a lot of smokables up back in the day, and there are these little lines on, like zigzags, like traditional rolling papers, right? There's these little lines on them that help them to burn evenly, just for example. But even if you just think about like printer paper, right? That was once tree pulp, and then it's been bleached in hexane and God knows what chemicals to like turn it white and to make it thin and make it pressable into paper. Have you looked into not just what's in the tobacco, but the actual rolling papers?
I haven't, you know, peripherally, I'm semi-familiar with the paper industry. And yeah, you know, they're using like sulfuric acid and all this stuff. So intuitively, it seems like a bad idea. I don't smoke, but I've heard that organic rice paper is the best option. So, which is, you know, it's safe food, very well-known substance. So if you're the person that's going to do that, that's what I'd recommend.
Got it. Another thing that's interesting about nicotine in the form of tobacco is the ceremonial use by indigenous cultures. You know, anytime I've ever participated in a plant medicine ceremony, for example, with people that are doing it according to some tradition, the use of tobacco, whether it's just used, diffused into the air or people are actually smoking it, is a huge, huge part of that experience. So it seems that there's some, I don't know, energetic element to tobacco and nicotine that's also very interesting. It's like, why, if it wasn't meaningful in any way and had no relevance, why would those traditions have lasted so long? You know?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's this romantic side to tobacco that I personally love and enjoy. You know, especially in the biohacker community, we tend to overemphasize like the stimulant side of things. And, you know, I take periodic breaks from nicotine. So, you know, also that's like the biohacker side of me. Like I try to test the limits. So I'll try to use as much as I can and then see how long I can stop. And, I took a month break, just earlier this year. And one of the things that I found most interesting about it was, when I was working and in the flow state, I didn't miss it. I didn't even think about it. I didn't care. I wanted it the most when I was relaxing on Sunday with my family, having good conversations, because I find that it enhances the moment. And so that's my personal experience. I find that I speak better. You know, I find that I enjoy the moment more and that I'm more present. So, you know, for that, those personal reasons, I really particularly enjoy it.
I do too.
If you've been through puberty or menopause or even the fabled manopause, you'll know that our hormones change throughout our life, and that's just how nature rolls. Now, what's not natural is that most of us no longer get key elements from our diet due to things like industrial agriculture. And when you're deficient in minerals, it can throw your entire system out of whack, especially when it comes to keeping your hormones in balance. And having enough magnesium in your system is a key to making that possible. So if you found yourself struggling with mood swings, getting stressed and irritated, or even craving foods you're not used to craving, you might be among the 75% of Americans who are magnesium deficient. To keep my hormones in check, every day I get a full spectrum dose of magnesium from Magnesium Breakthrough. It's a really unique product because it's got all seven essential forms of magnesium, including magnesium orotate, which is amazing for metabolic and hormonal health. So to get yourself all magged up, go to buyoptimizers.com/Luke and punch in the code Luke10 to save 10%. For my routine, I take two capsules before bed, which also helps me sleep, and then one in the morning to help me feel grounded and relaxed throughout my day. So go to buyoptimizers.com/Luke and use that code Luke10 to save 10%.
I particularly enjoy smoking cigarettes and cigars too. I was never someone who'd be like, I'm going to take a month off. It's like maybe take an hour off max, you know? So I've had an ongoing, you know, love-hate relationship with tobacco products and nicotine. So you created this company called Nic Nac that, as far as I can tell, is the cleanest version of nicotine on the market. You have like these Zen pouches, you know, that are, someone left one on my floor the other day. I don't even know who it was. I just found one. I didn't look at the ingredients, but I'm like, that can't be good. There's probably like aspartame and all kinds of weird stuff in there. But, and we'll talk more about that. But in terms of the dosage, like the ones that you make are like, what, 3, 4, 6 milligrams?
3 and 6, yeah.
Okay, 3 and 6, okay, per. And it's like a little mint, like a lozenge, basically.
Yeah, it's a lozenge.
I'm wondering, how much nicotine is someone getting milligram wise if they're smoking a cigarette or like smoking a full big ass Cuban cigar?
Yeah, that's actually a little bit controversial and it's been hard to measure. So we think, at least, you know, the studies show that it's somewhere between 2 and 5 milligrams. So it's actually a lot less. So there might be 15 milligrams in a cigarette, but often it's as low as 2 milligrams that you're actually absorbing. But there's also a lot of other things in cigarettes. And there's a lot of other reasons why they're so addictive. Like there's the oral fixation. And then in, there's actually these other chemicals in there. One of them, I can't remember its name. It's it is an inhibitor for the enzyme that breaks down neurotransmitters. And so it almost like turns up the noise on your brain. And this is just like another chemical that happens to be in tobacco. I think they're MRRIs or something like that. Anyways, you know, if you have dopamine in your brain or you name the neurotransmitter, all of them are being sustained longer. So you're not, your brain isn't breaking down these neurotransmitters as quickly. And so it's like I said, it's almost like turning the noise up in your brain. So this is another factor. And then there's other stuff in tobacco too. You know, these plants have, you know, incredibly complicated in terms of the number of alkaloids and, you know, nicotine has risen to the top in terms of the ones that people have studied and isolated, but in no way is that the whole story.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, one thing that trips me out about that and why I asked about the dosage of like a cigarette or cigar or even chewing tobacco is if you're not a user of tobacco or nicotine, like if I just handed the average person a really strong Cuban cigar and they hit on that thing for 15 minutes, they'd probably be throwing up and like have to lay down and be sweaty and like freak out, you know? But I remember being a little kid when I used to steal cigarettes from my mom, like cool menthols, you know, and I wanted to be cool, like the adult. So we'd go out in the field and smoke a cigarette and I'd just be laid out practically puking. One time my dad gave me some of his Skoal, you know, to trick me into not doing it. He's like, yeah, go nuts. You can have some. You're old enough. You're a man now. And I was probably like 10. Didn't tell me not to swallow it. Sick for a whole day, just puking my guts out. So it's interesting that like with your Nic Nac product, for example, it seems like the delivery method through the mouth or the low dose of nicotine doesn't really seem to have that effect. At least it doesn't on me. I feel totally fine on it.
I'd put you in the high tolerance category.
Okay.
Yeah. We certainly have people that think, oh, 6 is twice as much as 3. And so we get people all the time. It's like, oh yeah, let's get the 6 milligram. And you know, they can't handle it. So,
really?
Oh yeah. Most people, the large majority of people, especially even smokers and vapers, because, well, depending on the vape, because some vapes are crazy high, but often, like I said, because it's going through your lungs, a lot of it isn't being absorbed. It's less than you would think. So even them, potentially the 6 milligram can hit too hard.
So it's just a tolerance thing then.
It's partially a tolerance thing, but a lot of it is the individual physiology. So some people metabolize nicotine really well, and they'll be on the lower end of the half-life. So, you know, it might be like a 30-minute half-life if you're like a super nicotine metabolizer. And then if you're not so good, it might be more like 2 hours, you know, which if you compare to caffeine is still really fast, you know, caffeine being 5 to 6 hours for most people. So generally speaking, humans metabolize nicotine pretty dang well.
So it's kind of individual, like caffeine, right? You have some people that can't touch coffee because it totally sketches them out. And they have a coffee at 9 a.m. and they can't sleep the following night, for example. And then you have another type of person that can drink a coffee with dinner and go to bed at 10.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. I think that a lot of the nicotine products like nicotine gum, patches, lozenges like you make, et cetera, before kind of the biohacking thing and people discovered it's an incredible nootropic and mood enhancer, as you described, you know, having Sunday with your family and you feel really good. I mean, I love nicotine. I use it way, way too much. I think I would err on the side of abuse. I'll just admit that. However, a lot of people are using these type of products to quit smoking because of all the issues we've talked about, right? Cigarettes are just not good, especially standard ones. One of the things though that seems more problematic even perhaps than cigarettes is vaping. Have you looked into not only the chemicals in vapes, but some of the chemical reactions and things? I've heard some pretty nasty things about when you turn, you know, glycerin into an aerosol, you create some other really toxic metabolite and so on. I don't know the details, but it sounds pretty gnarly.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely a bad idea. So the way that vape started was, here's all these ingredients that are fine, maybe individually. And I'd hate on a lot of them to start, but you know, generally speaking, they're acceptable ingredients. And let's go ahead and just make this cocktail and let's see what happens. But no one ever thought about, hey, we're taking all these unstable chemicals and what happens when you put them at 500 degrees and you inhale them. I don't know of any good research actually documenting all the reactions, and it might be because there's too much variability, but these compounds are obviously unstable. So you have artificial sweeteners because that's the go-to sweetener for anything because they're the cheapest, you know, often 300 to 600 times sweeter. We can take a deeper dive on artificial sweeteners if you like. We have those, which are definitely unstable. And then who knows, artificial sweeteners, even natural flavors. I'm sorry, artificial flavors.
Yeah. With cherry vapes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You could just tell they're toxic because you'd be walking, you're at the gas station or someone walks by you with a cherry vape cloud, like it just smells nasty.
Oh yeah. And then they stay in the air way too long. Right. And obviously there's propylene glycol, which is the PEG. And so, you know, that may cause popcorn lung. I thought it was really interesting that vitamin E acetate took the fall. Like that was what came out in the news. It was like, hey, it's vitamin E acetate that's causing these problems. And I was like, I don't understand why you're singling out vitamin E, which is known to be like one of the safest supplements ever. So I thought that was interesting. Maybe it's true. Maybe there's some chemical reaction that happens with it. I don't know. And I'm not aware of any research that actually shows what happens. I mean, intuitively, it seems like a really bad idea.
Have you received anecdotal reports from people being able to get off of smoking or vapes using like an oral nicotine product?
Yeah. It's anecdotal. I should just go out and say it right now. Yeah. You know,
not making medical claims.
I'm not making any claims ever.
Yeah.
Wouldn't dare make any claims, especially as I'm sure you're aware, we're under a ton of scrutiny. So no, not making any claims. But yeah, no, I had a lovely lady email in and say, hey, I've been on cigarettes for 45 years, never could quit. Started using your product and I quit. So. And some other really cool stories, some other really interesting medical problems too. So really cool. Obviously all anecdotal, but it's been really rewarding, you know, to be able to get that feedback from some of our customers and say, hey, you guys better keep going because we really depend on your product. It's like, wow, awesome.
What was it like starting a company that is kind of adults only, a controversial molecule in terms of finding your way through regulations and rules and all of that stuff?
Oh, to this day, it's a huge, huge fight. I mean, we're going to just keep on fighting the best of our ability. You know, obviously a ton of red tape, you know, in many ways, rightfully, nicotine's under a lot of suspicion. And so we have a lot that will see our product and say, oh, you're going to kill people. How dare you? And all that. And we just have to kind of say, well, we hope not. We don't think so. But, you know, we're trying to rebrand nicotine and make it more acceptable. And in a lot of ways, we owe Zyn some credit there. There's something like 50 million people plus just in the United States that use nicotine. It's like 1 in 7 adults. So in our mind and from an ethics perspective, you know, we're just trying to give people the best possible option. You know, I think there's a need for a lot more research on nicotine, especially in humans and outside the context of tobacco. You know, we have so much data on what tobacco does, even though we haven't really, like I mentioned earlier, we don't really know exactly what's going on. But I think there's some exciting research starting to happen now within the nicotine space. And, you know, I can kind of speak to some of the, especially animal models that are happening now that are really exciting. And
Let's do it. Exciting research.
Sure.
Yeah, I knew it was blowing up when Andrew Huberman did a podcast or two about it, you know, as a proponent of the health benefits, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you. Cause I'm kind of a contrarian, right? And it's just like when there's a publicly held belief about something and then I start to find evidence to the contrary, I'm very interested in exposing that evidence.
Yeah, nicotine is fun because it is rebellious. I mean, it has this rebellious heritage. It's fun. I mean, and that's part of the problem, right? It's alluring. So yeah, I mean, right away, for all the people that think nicotine causes cancer and that's the source of the cancer, you know, even the WHO and the US Surgeon General both say, hey, not enough evidence to say that nicotine causes cancer. You know, obviously a lot of people are looking at it for what it does in that cholinergic acetylcholine pathway. I think a lot of people are starting to get familiar with that. Obviously, there's some very interesting things that happen when you stimulate that cholinergic pathway. You stimulate the vagus nerve. You, strengthen that gut-brain connection. It seems that nicotine has the potential to like really reduce cytokines, which is really cool. So there's definitely this immunomodulation that occurs. It's a wildly complicated process, but it seems that the initial results, especially in animal models, are really strong. So that's really cool. The study that I just found that I'm particularly stoked on, was in male mice, and they were looking at, well, first of all, they found that as part of the mitochondrial process, nicotine is likely a metabolite, and it acts as a signaling molecule for an enzyme called nicotinamide phosphoribosyl transferase, which is...
How long did it take you to memorize that?
Way too long.
I can never remember words like that. Some of you are like Ben Greenfield and these guys like will rattle off stuff like that. I'm like, dude, it took me 5 years to learn that, how to say the word, let alone like what it means.
Yeah, I probably didn't say it right, but that's okay. But yeah, I think the acronym's NAMPT. So anyways, this is a really important enzyme because it helps... create NAD plus. And obviously NAD plus has gotten a lot of hype recently. We found that too much is bad, not enough, also really bad. And anyways, in these male mice, this is super cool. They found that low dose nicotine created NAD plus homeostasis. So it basically, you know, if you're familiar with the concept of like reductive stress, which, you know, for people that aren't, basically, the NAD plus is the positive molecule in your electron transport chain in your mitochondria. And if the electrons don't have a place to go, they can bleed off. And electrons, of course, are highly reactive. They want a home. So they're going to either bind to oxygen or something worse. And they're going to make reactive oxygen species, ROS, which, you know, especially your audience is familiar with ROS. It's very aging. Your body has to then use glutathione or whatever else to deal with basically these ROS. These reactive oxygen species that are going to beat up your body. So what's thrilling about this, at least in mice, and it'll be exciting to see if it's true in humans too, is when you have NAD plus homeostasis, you're making more ATP, which is critical for everything's function. And then if your metabolism is working correctly, almost everything downstream works better. So they found in these mice that they had way less overall inflammation. They had less likelihood of developing cancer. They had better organ function, you know, prevented a lot of symptoms of aging, which is really exciting and not something that you would expect from nicotine. It's not something you'd expect from a stimulant. You know, usually you think, oh, it activates the sympathetic nervous system. It's going to increase your cortisol, all this stuff. It's like, well, maybe not. So I'm particularly excited about it as an anti-aging compound, which is a wild plot twist. And I didn't see it coming. I was researching. So nicotine is super close to nicotinamide, which is vitamin B3. And so obviously these molecules are like really, really closely related. And I was like, okay, well, it has to do something in the mitochondria. And you know, there's the obvious evidence that like, hey, smokers, generally speaking, they're lean. You know, they tend to have more energy, all these things. It's like, which is, you wouldn't expect. If someone's in a highly inflamed state, generally speaking, they get insulin resistance, they get diabetes, they get all these things that you don't want when you're chronically inflamed. So it's like, okay, well, what's going on here? Let's see if anyone's ever figured out what it does in the mitochondria. And so finally stumbled upon this study and like I said, I'm just thrilled. And so I'm really excited to see where this research goes.
If 3 to 6 milligrams of nicotine for an adult human is low dose, I wonder what low dose is for a mouse.
Yeah, no, they do it in nanograms per milliliter is how they did it. It was a tricky study. I mean,
I wonder if the mice get like super productive and focused, feel good.
Well, the older mice perform better in neurological tests.
Really?
Oh yeah. So, you know, they do the maze tests and all that stuff. And the mice that had the nicotine had, you know, they maintained their youthful performance.
Well, isn't it neuroprotective in some way too?
Yeah. I mean, the research indicates that from a signaling perspective, and then again, you know, obviously your brain has a lot of mitochondria. You need a lot of energy for your brain. And so if those mitochondria are functioning well, there's this metabolic side that's probably contributing. So there's been a ton of focus on the acetylcholine pathway, which from a signaling perspective also appears to be highly neuroprotective. But it appears that the effect might be even twofold.
We all know electromagnetic pollution is bad, but it's important to understand why. The evidence suggests that the majority of the harm from EMF comes from the chronic oxidative stress produced when the body's in a constant immune response. Basically, when we're faced with 3G, 4G, and 5G radiation and beyond, the body is continuously trying to attack whatever it perceives as a foreign invader. Now, unless you're prepared to live in a cave in the Himalayas, it's unlikely you're going to be able to avoid the onslaught of EMF in your life. But what if you could mitigate that immune response and thereby reduce the harm? Well, thankfully, there's a way to live in more harmony with our technological world, and it's called Blue Shield. It turns out, if there are harmonious frequencies in our environment that match or exceed the power of the incoherent frequencies, our body will prefer and attune to the healthy ones through a process called sympathetic resonance. The Blue Shield devices emit these frequencies using a mathematical algorithm that mimics nature, so the body can attune to them rather than the dangerous EMF and feel safe. And when we tune into the Blue Shield scalar wave frequencies, our bodies no longer perceive the non-native EMF as a threat, and our immune system begins to restore itself, and our bodies can finally rest and heal. To create your own EMF strategy, visit blueshield-us.com and use the code Luke to save 10%. Since I've been using the Blue Shield devices, which is, coming on probably 6 or 7 years by now, my energy levels have bounced back. I experience better sleep, less stress, and an overall sense of well-being. I really, really believe in what these guys are doing. So if you want to check it out, go to blueshield-us.com. There's no E in there. It's just B-L-U. And again, the code is Luke to save yourself a fat 10%.
You mentioned the cytokines, and that reminded me of during the COVID era of the past few years, I saw a few things percolate even out of the mainstream science space, which has proven itself to be largely untrustworthy, to say the least. But there was some substantial evidence coming out about using nicotine for whatever that thing was, and spike proteins and the cytokine storms, the kind of reaction that people were having from getting ill. Have you looked into any of that?
Yeah. On two fronts. So a lot of people are using nicotine for long COVID. This is anecdotal. I don't know. But at least in one study, they found, I think it was like 5 people, which again, you know, that isn't a great data point, but it's a starting point. And they found people that were suffering from the fatigue, you know, loss of smell, all this stuff. And they gave them nicotine. And they found within, at least for those 5 people, within hours to within a few days, all of them, the long COVID was gone. So I don't know how true that is, but as it is, I think it's definitely a call for more research. The theory behind it is they both bind to that ACE2 receptor. And supposedly, if your body can't clear the spike protein from that cholinergic pathway, which is really high in that receptor, then you're basically dampening that critical part of your nervous system. And nicotine binds so well, that's why they're called nicotinic receptors, it binds so well that hypothetically, out-competing the spike protein, kicking them off the receptor, and then allowing the body to actually finally clear the spike protein. This is the theory.
Interesting.
So that appears to be the case. Again, need more research, but the preliminary findings are really cool. For an overactive immune system, there is some evidence that nicotine might help by dampening those cytokines. And that's why, you know, some people have had really good results for like ulcerative colitis or even potentially Crohn's or MS is another good example, even though it's not digestive, that you'll see a dampening in that over-responsive immune system, which is pretty fascinating.
Had an idea for your next product for Crohn's and colitis. Nicotine suppositories.
it would work.
Get the payload right where the problem is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, nicotine gets in your bloodstream pretty effectively. So I don't know if that would be necessary, but it might be more fun.
Just thinking outside of the box.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm halfway jokey, but I think how many times has John been on the show, Jared? Like 8 times or something at this point? Dr. John Lawrence, he's got a company called Mitozen.
Oh, yeah. I love his products.
And, you know, he makes suppositories, which is a method of delivery taken from the pharmaceutical industry, right? Because it's better absorption. It's less painful and inconvenient than an IV. And so it's just a superior method of delivery. But I love talking about it just because it's just funny. Because I talk about it so much, people are like, wow, he really has a butt thing. You know? He must really enjoy it. I'm like, no, I actually don't enjoy it. I just enjoy getting the benefits. I want the maximum impact of whatever molecules I'm trying to get into my body.
Oh, totally. Yeah, his, what is it? The 100 milligram melatonin, 100 milligram CBD.
Yeah.
Sandman, I think.
Yeah, Sandman.
Yeah, that product, it definitely kicks.
Yeah, I do. I do those a couple times a week. You know, if I got like a poor night's sleep the night before and I'm super tired, I'm like, wow, I got a big day tomorrow.
Do you find that you metabolize it fast enough or do you like crank citrus? How do you?
Well, you know, with the melatonin, the high dose, when I first started using this stuff, this is a couple, probably 3 years ago or something like that. I've had to find a sweet spot. Like I use the one, I think it's 250 milligrams of melatonin. It's got a bunch of glutathione and magnolia bark and a lot of other great compounds in it. But what I found is I would be groggy the next morning. And I was like, what the hell? Like I thought it's supposed to metabolize, but I was taking it too late.
Mm.
So now when I use it, I mean, I'll take it at like 7, you know, so I start to get tired at 10 and then the half-life of it seems to be such that if I wake up at 7 or 8 the next morning that I wake up refreshed, you know. But yeah, it depends on the person. But for me, I think I probably metabolize melatonin a bit slower than some. So if I take it like at 11 or midnight, yeah, I'm not going to be able to wake up. I'll wake up all groggy and super weird brain fog kind of thing. Absolutely. But you also get used to it over time too. That's the thing. Because even now that I think about it, sometimes I will take it a bit later and I'm like, I'm kind of pushing it. It's 10 o'clock or something. And then I think, well, I'm going to just wing it. And then I actually do pretty well with it. So I think over time, you kind of just learn how to work with it.
Totally. I found that over the smaller doses actually works better too. And I don't know if some people say that melatonin might actually turn into serotonin, which might be problematic. So I've noticed that at those smaller doses, I might have like nightmares or something like that, or like an overactive mind, which I know a lot of people experience, especially at kind of like that 5 to 10 milligram dose. But I found that if I go up to 30 or 50, it seems to be that more of like just super anti-inflammatory, really deep rest. And I don't know if there's like a breaking point where you get over that hump. And then if there is the negative effects of too much serotonin, if that's actually canceling it out, and you would probably know better than I, but I just kind
interesting.
Of thinking about that.
No, that's interesting. I've never heard that, but I have also, I feel like every show now I talk about plant medicine. it's ridiculous. But I have observed how in the ceremony space, it's more common that these are taking place at night. which I don't prefer personally because I don't like messing up my sleep. But, you know, I'm going to go with the program. But I've thought about that in the correlation to Joe Dispenza's work, right? How you put on an eye mask and you create darkness when you do his meditations and stuff. And then the breathing exercises, the breath holds, all of that, the way Dispenza describes it is you're basically putting pressure on the pineal gland, and there's a piezoelectric effect on the crystals in the pineal gland. And then that creates this chemical cascade of, I forget the order, but if it's melatonin to the metabolite of serotonin to the metabolite of dimethyltryptamine, DMT. Mm-hmm. And that's why you can do meditative and breathwork practices and you can see visions and, I don't want to say hallucinate, but definitely see fractals and colors. And I've witnessed people who are like, never taken a drug in their life, stone cold sober, and they are tripping balls doing Joe Dispenza stuff. My dad being one of them.
Interesting.
We took him to a retreat and he took off his eye mask and he's all, how was it, Dad? Are you okay? And he's like 80, you know? And he's like, oh, that was interesting. He said, I started seeing all these colors and lights and I thought my eye mask was off. And then I realized it was on and I was still seeing all the lights. You know? I was like, yes, you hit it. But to your point, I'm sure there are people that, you know, are much smarter at science than I am, but there definitely is a cascade effect of like melatonin, serotonin, dimethyltryptamine and all of that. So I've always just kind of suspected there's something to do with that when people are wanting to work with entheogens, that it's happening at night because, you know, 3-4 in the morning is when your highest melatonin is. And so there must be some sort of assistance that we humans have become aware of over the ages of indigenous peoples developing these rituals and ceremonies. And they know, you know, it has to do with the cosmos and where the moon is and your melatonin and how that all affects your brain and stuff. It's all very interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think too, like symbolically that, you know, the mystery of darkness, you know, there's like that aspect too, like that there's a veil.
Right.
So all these ideas I think contribute to. Which is kind of fun.
Right.
Whether or not people are aware of them or not.
Yeah, it still works. But that's interesting that you've had some funky dreams and nightmares and stuff working with the medium dose of melatonin. I've never experienced that. I just don't notice it if I don't take a lot. I'm just like, eh.
Yeah, only at the lower level. If I go to the higher level, sleep great.
Interesting.
Kind of interesting. So, and I think a lot of people, I've at least talking to other people, have had similar experience. So,
cool. So, you know, you seem like a classy guy. We just met, Nico, but I don't think you're going to try to shit on, you know, your competitors. Most people I have on the show, if they're trying to interrupt a market, they're usually pretty.
You want to play nice,
respectful at like calling out Zen or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. But just speaking objectively and broadly, what are some of the problems in terms of ingredients you found with other like smoking alternatives or other nicotine products?
Sure. You know, I think that a lot of these companies have actually done a great service. You know, they've provided, in my opinion, a much better product. And like I said, there's
much better than like smoking.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, again, you have 50 million plus people that use products that, you know, they're known to cause cancer. They're known to cause all these problems. So they're ushering all these people that, you know, they're not going to quit. Nicotine's highly addictive. We all know that. And it makes me feel great. I love the way it makes me feel. So, I have no desire to quit. So it's given them a better option. So I'll give them that credit. And I think that's great. You know, and look at what Swedish Match has accomplished in Sweden. You know, Sweden went from being super high population smoking. I think it's down to like 6% or something.
Really?
Yeah. Like almost no one smokes. They still use snus, which is, you know, right. It's tobacco within a pouch.
But yeah. I used to use those.
Yeah. I mean, it appears to be a lot healthier than smoking. I mean,
they're strong though. They'll knock you on your ass.
Oh yeah. They're way more nicotine, yeah. which might be indicative that nicotine is not the problem, right? They're getting more nicotine, but, you know, obviously that evolved into these now nicotine pouches that, you know, they don't contain any tobacco. What I don't love about them is, of course, they have artificial sweeteners. You know, things like sucralose, I think, are highly controversial. You know, there's now research showing that a certain amount of sucralose probably degrades into a chemical called sucralose 6-acetate, which might be genotoxic, which to me is not good. They might cause gut dysbiosis. You know, a lot of people complain about them and don't tolerate them well. It certainly appears to be the case. So,
have you found anyone using aspartame in those kind of nicotine products?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They use aspartame, Acelfame K or Ace K. sucralose. All three of those are very popular in pouches.
Wow.
You know, I can't remember exactly to which product, but yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those things I really try to avoid. You know, aspartame. Yeah. It's kind of not talked about that much, but when I got into this, you know, 25 years ago or whatever, there was a documentary, I think it was called The Bitter Truth or something. It was a whole expose on aspartame. Mm-hmm. And it was like terrifying.
It has a sordid history.
Yeah, I became super paranoid. All I remember about it is A, it's really, really bad for you. Don't ever do it. And Donald Rumsfeld was like involved in the legislation of allowing mm-hmm. it to slip into our food supply.
Well, it got rejected multiple times.
It did?
It got rejected multiple times. And then, yeah, finally, I can't remember if it was Rumsfeld or someone else actually like forced it through.
I think it was him.
Yeah.
Well, this is back in the day.
They call it a conspiracy theory when I now, first, which is funny, but.
When I first became a conspiracy analyst, this is like during the Bush era, the Iraq War, mm-hmm. Rumsfeld, Karl Rove, like all those nasty Republicans. Now I realize they're all just the same. Fighting for the same team.
One camp.
But
yeah, for sure.
You know, when I saw the Rumsfeld name, and I was like, definitely not taking it now, you know, because they were all just such just gross war criminals and whatnot. Okay, so what about, this is something that there's a lot of debate about, not necessarily exclusively to nicotine products, but all kind of, you know, healthy alternative products, and that is natural flavors. And we know that, you know, there's a lot of sort of legal ease around a lot of the terminology used in food additives and stuff. And I personally am not really that uptight about like natural flavors. I know they're not natural unless some brands will use like an organic fruit extract flavoring, right?
Sure.
Because I've quizzed people on my show that have products. I think, I don't think it was Ben Greenfield. I think it was his partner from Keon. I was like, all right, what's up with the natural flavors and your aminos? Like people are getting on my case because I promote it and stuff. And I don't know, some people are just super, as you mentioned, orthorexic. And I mean, I'm pretty paranoid when it comes to food, but like, I don't know, dude. I don't really care if there's like citric acid in something and natural flavors, you walk outside and, you know, do some breath work and you're breathing like chemtrails. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah,
there's
only so much you can do for sure.
There's only so many things you can control. That said, if there are better alternatives when it comes to natural flavoring, I'm all for it, but I'm just personally not that concerned. If I drink a healthy energy drink, like my Update drinks, I think has some kind of natural flavoring. I asked them about it. They're like, we checked into it. It's all good. It's the cleanest you can get. Good enough for me. So what about the flavorings in like these oral tobacco products?
Yeah, I mean,
feel free to shit on everyone if you want to.
You know, I think I'm with you. I think for the most part, they're probably fine. I think the danger of them is you don't have to disclose what cocktail they are. From a chemistry perspective, some of these molecules are pretty freaky. You know, the citrus ones are pretty safe is my understanding. You know, like a citrus natural flavor is going to look pretty close to what you actually find in a citrus fruit. Some of them are a little bit freakier and they might react to stuff, but at the same time, who knows? And they're so potent that you don't need that much. I mean, I think the worst bit is it's just, you don't know. You know, no one discloses what it is. They don't disclose what plants they're getting it from or animals. So, you know, and generally speaking, like, this is me being a little bit biased towards the chemistry side. It's like a compound is a compound. Like I'd rather people just disclose what compound it is. I don't really care as much where it comes from because like purification steps are wildly effective in modern chemistry. So you can get an unnatural source of something. And if it's wildly pure, it's like, okay, well, a compound's a compound. Like it, generally speaking, it's going to work the same way with your physiology. At least that's my understanding and what I've observed.
So like, for example, a synthetic spearmint flavor or something like that that's made in a lab in New Jersey.
Like,
is not as good as an essential oil spearmint, obviously, but there is some rigor involved in the purification or the manufacturing.
100%. So I personally wouldn't be freaked out about it. I mean, there are some of them that are freaky chemicals, but I don't know that it's that big of a deal. In my mind, you know, so much of the food industry is like penny pinching. It's like, hey, you know, we're not going to use a natural sweetener because, you know, artificial sweeteners, they're 600 times sweeter. We use almost none of it. So let's go with that. So our mindset was, let's deliver the best product we can, you know, do the right thing. And then we're not going to penny pinch so that, you know, we're just deliver the best possible product. And so we're like, well, why wouldn't we do the thing that costs 2 cents more? That then we can say, hey, this is actually spearmint oil from a spearmint plant and, you know, has this wild chemistry that you can't make in a lab because it isn't just one chemical. That's why it's always a cocktail. So you have some, you know, plants make just a crazy mixture of things that also the human body has been consuming for thousands of years. You know, your body knows what it is, generally speaking. And there's actually, you know, cool research showing that there might be different things that happens with these different oils, which I think is fun and might contribute to just a more elevated product. I think that what's really special about our product that is a little bit different, and this might be a little bit too chemistry heavy, but most of these products depend on pH adjusters. And the reason why, and this is why you can't swallow nicotine. Nicotine needs to be in an alkaline environment for it to be absorbed. So that's why if you swallow it and it goes in your stomach, it's like swallowing capsaicin. Like it's very irritating because it's in an acidic environment. Your body doesn't absorb it and it just sits around and makes you nauseous.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so
I wonder if that's why you get so sick if you like take a dip of Skoll or Copenhagen and you don't know better and you swallow your spit.
Exactly.
And you're like, you want to die.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like the worst ever.
Have you ever taken capsaicin?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I've messed around with that.
Is that like
one.
A black pepper extract or
it's,
something?
That's like cayenne extract.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so like very okay. spicy. It's like okay. like the spicy component in a pepper is the capsaicin.
Okay.
And so it appears to have all these really awesome benefits. You know, it stimulates mucus production, all this stuff in your gut. If you take out an empty stomach, as I learned, you'll get pretty dang nauseous because it irritates the crap out of your stomach. So nicotine, very similar. And that's why you kind of get like a burning sensation from it. It's an inherently spicy chemical. So these companies, they know that depending on the absorption rate of nicotine, it hits more of the dopamine side of the brain. And so that's why people love the really quick hit, the really fast absorption. You're getting more of a dopamine response and less of the acetylcholine response. And so with the slower absorption rate, you're actually biasing those neurotransmitters towards the acetylcholine side, which also hypothetically could make it less addictive. So the way that we got around that, and well, I suppose I should talk about why that might be a problem. So the go-to chemical to accomplish this is sodium carbonate, which sounds like baking soda, but it's not. It's the more alkaline cousin to sodium bicarbonate. And so what this does is, it, of course, increases your oral pH like crazy and makes you absorb the nicotine really quickly. The downside of that, though, is you're putting something really caustic against tissue that's fairly sensitive. And so just like if you're exposed to other caustic chemicals, they cause caustic burns. And so there's an interesting study called, is sodium carbonate a causative factor in oral lesions? And so, and I actually think this is where the myth arises that there's fiberglass in chew. You've ever heard that before?
Be like, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. People say, oh yeah, there's fiberglass in chew. You know, it tears up your gums. And it's, I don't think that there's fiberglass in chew, but I think that this chemical might be contributing to those experiences where people are noticing that their gums are inflamed, that it's very irritating. And, you know, nicotine is irritating in itself to some degree. But I think that part of the reason that this is a go-to chemical is because when you inflame the area, you draw more blood to it and you further accelerate that absorption. So I think this is kind of a little bit of a trick, like, hey, let's put this in here. Let's get that pH super high and let's just agitate the crap out of that buccal tissue and really draw the nicotine in. And so the way that we got around that, because, you know, we made this product for everyone, not just crazy biohackers.
I'm going to have one right now, by the way. Well, yeah. All this talk about nicotine, I'm like, yeah, it's probably about time I throw one of these knickknacks in.
I'm with you. I'll join you.
So if we start talking like we have marbles in our mouth, folks, that's why. Carry on.
Absolutely. So this is something that we're going through the patent process on, but xylitol is such a cool and interesting polyol. It's a sugar alcohol. It's 5-carbon as opposed to 6-carbon like glucose. So it's very close to glucose. It actually has a really cool history. It's originally from Finland because it's from birch trees. And during World War II in Finland, there was a sugar shortage, you know, but they had all these birch trees. So like, oh, well, let's have xylitol. You know, we still want to have treats or whatever. And so, like, there's this xylitol heritage in Finland. So if you ever go to Finland, you'll notice that there's xylitol like in tons of stuff on the shelf. But anyways, what they found, and you know, based on whatever World War II data we have, depending, you know, we'll see. I don't know how accurate it is, but what they found is that cavities became non-existent, And there's actually a 50% reduction in ear infections. So it appeared to have this just amazing effect on the global population. And the literature indicates that it's because it's super potently gram positive. And what that means is basically it's super preferential to good bacteria. So it kills bad bacteria and feeds the good bacteria. So it's like a double whammy, because if you're killing the bad bacteria, that's you can end up with dysbiosis. But this is better than that. It's killing the bad bacteria and then feeding the good bacteria. So they actually start to outcompete. And they found that, like, you know, if pregnant women consume xylitol, they have better outcomes in terms of like even their baby's microbiota. So it's a pretty powerful prebiotic, which is really cool. But what happens in your mouth is it kills these acidifying bacteria, which is the bad thing. That's what you don't want. Like these strange streptococcus that make your mouth super acidic. And then obviously you're mixing your clearly alkaline, you know, your calcium based teeth to something that, you know, wants to bind to that. So it kills those bacteria. And then of course it makes you salivate. And then, you know, our physiology is so amazing. When you salivate, your body actually releases all these really good alkaline chemicals, you know, releases these calciums and magnesiums, because your body is trying to restore at least the neutral pH in your mouth. So what we're trying to patent, you know, we've submitted all of our patents for, is this mechanism of using xylitol as something that increases your oral pH as a means of then delivering the nicotine without having to use these like really caustic chemicals. So
wow,
that's kind of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah. Pretty nifty.
You know, that's interesting, because I've heard some of that about xylitol, and I never made the correlation between obviously like oral nicotine products, but there are a lot of you know, mouthwashes and nasal sprays and things like that with xylitol, and I've used them from time to time just because you hear they're good for you, and I didn't really look that deeply into it, but that makes sense. There's definitely a correlation there, because other people have figured out other kind of health supporting products using xylitol.
Totally. It's a little bit controversial because dogs don't metabolize it. So we've gotten flagged. They're like, oh, dogs can't have xylitol. It's like, okay, yeah.
First of all, you don't want to give your dog nicotine.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Your dog's going to have to stick to cigarettes. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
But just so people know, because people think, oh, if it's bad for dogs, it's bad for humans. And this is why animal models don't translate to human models. Because in humans, xylitol's non-insulinogenic. You don't have an insulin response. The calories you get from xylitol are actually because it's fermented in your gut and makes butyrate. And that's why it's like totally keto friendly. For dogs, they have an insulin response. So if you're, but it doesn't increase your blood sugar. So this is the problem. So if you get something that doesn't replace glucose, you know, you're not getting any calories from it, but you have an insulin response and you go hypoglycemic, obviously super problematic. And this is why it's toxic to dogs. Humans don't have that response at all, therefore not toxic to humans.
That's so weird about dogs, how they can't eat certain foods like chocolate, avocados. I'm sure there are others.
Onions, grapes, I think.
Really?
Supposedly.
I know another one. Okay. Years ago, I dated a girl who had a little dog, a tiny little dog, and it used to love eating blueberries. Like my dog loves freaking frozen blueberries.
Oh, yeah.
It won't eat raw ones, only frozen. Weird. And I used to eat a lot of acai. And so, you know, usually I would like Google something. Can a dog eat X, Y, and Z? Because I'm trying to feed them all kinds of weird superfoods and stuff. And so one day I gave the dog some acai and I didn't look it up because I thought it's a berry. He likes blueberries, whatever, same difference. Dog got super sick. And then I Googled it. And
oh,
I was
no.
Like, dogs can't have acai. It's super toxic to them.
That's crazy. That's funky.
That particular canines in particular have their own little steves. Like they're just certain things they can't tolerate that most other animals and humans do very well with.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, it's almost trippy. Like for some things, rodents are actually better because they're so robust, which is fascinating. And then humans are wildly robust. I mean, humans are amazing. The amount of insults that we can tolerate. I'm just amazed at like the general population. Like, yeah, they're really sick. It's true. But they keep on trucking. And I'm honestly often amazed at that, like how robust humans are. But
yeah, me too.
Yeah, dogs are funky, especially if you look at like how similar our digestive systems are. It's like we both have these highly acidic stomachs and short digestive tracts and, you know, honestly pretty similar teeth. And you would think they'd be like, oh, well, we're both omnivores. It should be pretty dang close.
Totally.
But yeah, it's fascinating the differences for sure.
So people listening know acai for the dogs.
Let's take a moment to explore one of the coolest innovations I've come across in my endless search for ways to improve our quality of life and vitality. It's a quantum energy streaming service called Quantum Upgrade. Through years of research and innovation, they've created one of the world's most accessible forms of quantum energy. And when you subscribe to their service, Quantum Upgrade transmits this energy into your home, car, or even onto your phone. Let's face it, many of us are stuck in patterns we repeat daily. We get up, we get dressed, we go to work, and this routine takes a lot of energy and at times leaves little room for personal growth. Well, it's widely known that quantum energy supports change and transformation. Your life can change dramatically when you access the quantum energy surrounding us. I personally love this service and often use its boosting feature at specific times when I need extra support with my mood and energy. Now, as far out as the realm of quantum energy is, rest assured that Quantum Upgrade has been tested and studied by independent institutes, doctors, and labs with phenomenal results in placebo-controlled double-blind studies, which can be easily viewed right on their website. So do yourself a favor and try this service out for free for 15 days. Just hop over to quantumupgrade.io and enter the code Luke15 to activate your free trial. Again, that's quantumupgrade.io.
All right, so you guys in Knickknack are using xylitol, and then what are you using for flavorings? You're doing like essential oils?
Yeah, it's only we only use essential oils.
Wow.
You know, in the tobacco industry, just like alcohol, you have no obligation to put your ingredients on the label. We do it entirely voluntarily because, you know, it's part of our company ethos that we want to be just ridiculously transparent in everything that's going in there. You know, we're doing the best we can. We're trying to use the best possible ingredients. And I can get into why we use synthetic nicotine, non-tobacco nicotine.
Yeah, that was my next question.
So yeah, so we can get into that
too.
Are
you peeking at my iPad?
No, I didn't see it.
That was my next question.
Well, it's one of those things I like to explain because it is complicated. Yeah. But essential oils are awesome. I mean, the flavor is incomparable.
This one's pretty good.
Yeah, real essential oils taste really good.
What flavor did I have?
Grapefruit.
Oh, grapefruit. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Thank you.
It does have a nice little spice to it too.
Yeah. Yeah. The nicotine still comes through.
When I first got
sure.
these, I was like 3 milligrams, 6 milligrams. I don't know if that's strong enough for me. Pretty high tolerance, but maybe it's that xylitol effect you talked about. Like I do actually feel a nice little refreshing zing in there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, we can't make everyone happy. So like some people complain, oh, your product doesn't hit hard enough. It's like, yeah, well, you know, we don't have pH adjusters, so it's not going to hit as hard. And, you know, we're trying to delay that response because we're trying to make it, you know, as, you know, if it's possible to make it as little addictive as possible. So like, you know, we're trying to do all these things that are beneficial to the customer and that doesn't always translate well, but that at least was our goal. But yeah, I mean, real essential oils, you know, it's just like, if you have a really quality mint, you know, the ones that taste really good are the ones that use the real ingredients. And, you know, it's like you're having a bite of grapefruit versus something that's like, obviously, you know, fake grapefruit. So
yeah.
I think it's just more fun. It's a better experience. And there is one interesting study on giving rodents, or I think it was particular rats, they're giving them like super high dose nicotine, like 1 milligram per kilo, which is like, that's really a lot. Anyways, what they found was if they gave them either melatonin or spearmint oil, it restored almost all of their biomarkers to normal levels. So even at that like crazy high dose, they found that, okay, the anti, you know, most of like the, if you go too high on nicotine, and this was really evident in that NAD plus study I mentioned, that if you go too high, you do hit a point where the effects are negated, which is already like, if you scale it up to humans, it's a pretty high dose where you negate the effects. And then if you go really high, then yeah, there's going to be negative effects. Just like anything else. And this, again, this is why we need more human research so we can find like the optimal dosing. Cause humans probably metabolize nicotine better than rodents do. Anyways, I thought that was interesting that, you know, spearmint oil was happened to be in the study that was,
I
had
find
that
it all interesting. And by the way, never feel bad about like geeking out into the science and research and stuff. I personally love that. And I'm sure there's a faction of people that listen to the show that want to take the deep dive.
I know your audience is on
They could
board.
Go listen to like a 5-minute Lewis Howes show if they want something
yeah.
quick.
Yeah. It's like, heck yeah.
We go deep here. That's kind of how we're set up. So
I love it.
Always feel free to just tangent away.
For sure. Well, should I jump into the nicotine side?
Yeah.
All right, we'll do. So there's a number of reasons why we opted for what's referred to as synthetic nicotine. We'd argue that it's still natural. I think it's up for debate. It's derived from natural starting ingredients. It's non-GMO. And the benefit, all nicotine comes from a lab. It's always going to come. Anytime you have a highly purified substance, it has to come from a laboratory. It's the way it is. If you want anything pure, and there's good reason why you'd want it to be pure, because there's other stuff in tobacco that's potentially problematic, like the pesticides and the tar and all this stuff. And so we're like, well, let's just do the best possible thing and get, it is synthesized, but it's from natural non-GMO starting ingredients, and they can make something that's just ridiculously pure. And, you don't have to deal with this crazy dirty crop. And to us, it just made sense. Here's something that's void of heavy metals, void of pesticides, void of GMOs. It's like, this is basically as pure as it gets. If you use the product, I think it feels comparable to nicotine derived from tobacco. I don't notice a big difference. It's even the same isomer, the effective isomer, if you guys want to get really nerdy. So that's why we opted for that. And we think that it's absolutely the best stuff you can get. So that's the way we went.
In terms of dealing with regulatory agencies and marketing a nicotine product, is there any difference in the barrier to entry selling something commercially if you're using a tobacco product versus a synthetic version of nicotine?
It used to be. So now there's no benefit. But there was a random omnibus bill in 2021 where they magically said all nicotine is now tobacco, according to the FDA.
Really?
And FDA has jurisdiction. Correct. So yeah, we're filed with the FDA. We have to do all that. It's not for the faint of heart. Yeah.
picked a tough lane just in terms of...
We're tilted at windmills, if you're familiar with the expression. It's not an easy gig. There's always the fear that someone's going to show up or send us a letter or try to shut us down. So it's definitely a nerve-wracking experience. But
I mean, there's some industries like that, right? Anytime you're dealing with tobacco, alcohol, and then on the regenerative medicine side, stem cells,
totally.
Exosomes, peptides. I mean, there's like peptides specifically. There's so many companies that I've ordered peptides from, and like, I vet them. It's my great source, and I'm ordering them. And then I go back and the website's just gone.
Oh, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I
wrestle with that. And I've talked about this with other guests on the show who are kind of in the fringes of, biohacking or alternative medicine. It's like, on one side, as a consumer, I can see that these regulatory agencies would be serving an integrous purpose, right?
Because sure.
You don't want a guy like you coming to market with your knickknack product and it's full of fucking cyanide, right? Like
yeah.
Someone has to be kind of, someone has to be watching out for the public, right? But then we now know, especially over the past 4 years, that these agencies are compromised so dramatically, to say the least, right? And that they're essentially arms of the pharmaceutical companies. And then you have like these pharmaceutical cartels that are essentially... that own the regulatory agencies through lobbying. And so now you've got the chicken guarding or the fox guarding the hen house situation, right? So it's like, I feel bad for people like you that are like really being conscious about what you're doing. And you have to jump through all these hoops when there are nefarious characters out there producing various products that not only harm people, but in many cases, as we're seeing now, cause people to die suddenly. In a very widespread way. And it's just like open season, no regulations, it's all good, no clinical trials needed, just throw it on the market and get it in everyone. It's crazy.
So we live in strange times, for sure.
So it's like the good guys now are being penalized while the bad guys who have the deep pockets are kind of just Wild West, do whatever they want, and everyone's making a bunch of money. And meanwhile, people are being hurt. So,
it's interesting. I think historically, the goal has been innocent until proven guilty. I think that was generally speaking, hey, go for it. This is America. Go start, go do cool things. And then we'll pull it if people complain about it. I think that was historically the way it worked. And I think on the nicotine front, I think Europe has taken a much better stance. Like basically they're like, hey, people are not smoking. This is getting people to not smoke. Why would you stifle this, tobacco-free movement?
Right.
Like,
right.
Let people go nuts. Whereas I think the FDA messed up so much on vape. I think that was like their big whoopsies that now they're, I think, a little gun shy. They're kind of like...
Did you see that documentary? I think it was called... It was about Juul.
The Juul one.
About those vapes.
I mean, I'm pretty familiar with it, so I didn't I didn't watch it because I was like, I'm pretty familiar with the history.
That's like not my generation. I'm not like the vape generation, yeah, I don't think. Whatever, yeah. One X, I think I am, Gen X. So I didn't know about any of that, you know? And that documentary was... It was a great documentary, but it was also shocking. Just, I mean, from a entrepreneurial business perspective, it's just one of those things where people scale too fast and it gets all crazy and they make zillions of dollars and then poof, just are completely annihilated. So it's interesting from that perspective,
sure.
But also a lot of people were being negatively affected by the product too.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if that's to some degree overhyped, just to play devil's advocate, because the vape industry became a major thorn in the side of big tobacco in the U.S. You think about this industry that was highly, highly centralized for decades. You know, basically three players, two, kind of three, in the U.S. making just hand over fist money. You know, it costs like 11 cents to make a pack of cigarettes. The margin is insane. And in a lot of ways...
What is a pack of cigarettes these days? $12 or something?
Well, I think that's like their cost of goods.
No, but I mean, like, if you go to the gas station...
If you're in a state that has excise tax, which most of them do, and most of them it's pretty steep, yeah, they're $10-$12.
That's wild.
I mean, part of that is the government taking their cut, which is might be part of the reason why the government likes it. But
I haven't bought a pack of cigarettes since, I don't know, very long time. When I first started smoking back in the 80s, cigarettes were, I think, $2 a pack. Like some Camels.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if you go to Mexico, there still are. They're $1.50, right? So, you know, it's probably what they should cost, but...
Right. Yeah. That's still a good margin, right? If it's 12 cents a pack,
that's insane margin.
For $2, you're killing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the problem, right? All of a sudden, you have an industry that's highly distributed. You have all these mom and pop shops, you know, people going in and getting whatever their custom, whatever they want. And that drove a lot of that economy away from big tobacco. So vape, obviously I still think vape is terrible, but you know, I could also see the flip side of it is you're going to want to put out some hit pieces and take down vape. If you're the big guys and want to get people to usher it into the products that you own, sensible business strategy.
Totally.
So
I wish they would have had vapes when I was a cigarette smoker. Cause this is like pre like oral nicotine like you make, but I used to just panic on airplanes because I'd be jonesing for a cigarette. And then now I've like smelled vape when I go in the bathroom, you know, on the airplane. I'm like, God damn it, I wish we had those back in the day. And then I would have been in there like up in the fan.
Oh yeah.
Raging on my vape.
I'm always surprised just flying down here. There was a guy that's just like sneaking hits. And I was like
in his seat?
Just in his seat.
Epic.
Like, wow, bold, man.
More power to him.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever, you go for it.
Well, when I was a kid, dude, in the 70s, there was like smoking and non-smoking sections on the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm 5 years old flying back and forth to see my divorced parents. And, you know, I would be, as a kid, they wouldn't put you in the smoking section, but the guy, you know, there'd be three people right behind you just smoking, smoking Marlboros the whole flight. It's like, it's so funny, the thing. Sometimes public health measures are so ridiculous.
It's hilarious, as we
now know more than ever. Tell me about in the nicotine pouches. I've always been, you know, one thing that's cool about what you're doing, obviously, as we've discussed, is you have like complete transparency. Every single thing that's in your product, like you can go right on the package or on the website and see what it is.
By now, everybody knows how important the gut microbiome is. A healthy gut means more energy, better sleep, and clearer skin. And because of the gut-brain connection, it's even critical to how you think and process information. That's one of the many reasons I take probiotics on the daily, and you probably should too. But how do you know which brand to pick, right? You've probably seen those fancy probiotics in the refrigerated section at the health food store. And it seems like they'd have to be better than the ones sitting on the regular old shelf, right? Well, let me invite you on a brief thought experiment. The human body operates at about 98 degrees and room temperature is around 70. So how can a probiotic survive the journey from your gut when it can't even survive at room temperature? The answer is, of course, that 99.9% of them don't. And that's where the spore-based probiotic from Just Thrive Health comes in. Their proprietary strains have been third-party clinically tested and proven to arrive 100% alive in your gut. I mean, you can even open the capsules and sprinkle them onto any food or drink and not lose any potency. So stop wasting your money on probiotics that never end up where they need to go. Cruise over to justthrivehealth.com and use the code Luke20 to get 20% off a 90-day bottle. That's like getting a month's supply for free. Oh, and check out the Lifestylist episode 499 for the full download on Just Thrive's suite of products designed to help you take back control of your health. I love this company. They've got prebiotics, probiotics, immune and detox formulas, and they've even got products for pets, which is what I feed to our dog Cookie. Again, that's justthrivehealth.com and use the code Luke20 for your discount.
One thing about the nicotine pouches that has always skeeved me out a little bit is like, what is the actual pouch made of? It's not like organic cotton or something. Is there any fiberglass or microplastics or anything like that that you're aware of that people are putting in their gums using that type of product?
It's definitely cause for concern. I haven't been able to find anything. Obviously, it came out that, you know, people's tea bags were full of microplastics.
Exactly, and, yeah.
So that totally came out. Supposedly, they're natural cellulose fibers. So I'm hoping that they're doing it right. I've not found any evidence otherwise. You know, generally speaking, companies that take shortcuts with things like artificial sweeteners, you would suspect that they're going with the cheapest possible option. I don't know that anyone, I'm not aware of any research actually analyzing that. So it's something I'm worried about. I've looked into, but I'm not able to find any clear answers. Okay. Supposedly it's pure cellulose or, you know, some type of cellulose.
Okay.
And if that's true, then most likely it's probably pure because you can get, again, going back to my previous comment about highly purified chemicals. It's like you can get highly, highly, highly pure cellulose. And if that's what you're making out of, it should be fine. So,
all right. Like a lot of, supplement capsules are made of cellulose, which is basically just like melted plant material.
Basically, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a wise practice for consumers to kind of become Karens, you know? I'm a water Karen. So if I start to like a drink, you know, some kind of, I don't know, kombucha drink or whatever, I'm the asshole that will email them at customer service and be like, I need to know the water source, right? And then they'll get back to me, oh, it's pure, because on the label it'll say like purified water. And I'm mm-hmm. like, that can mean anything. It's very ambiguous.
Yeah.
So I'll say, what's your water source? What type of filtration do you use, et cetera? And if it's something I'm drinking all the time, you know,
because yeah,
I
want to
drink a bunch of fluoride and stuff, you know,
totally. So.
I think it's smart if people are concerned to actually just email these companies and call them to task and say like, hey, I want to know this particular ingredient. Where does it come from? What's in it? And start to create a public demand for more transparency, right? Like you just took it upon yourself. You're like, I want to be legit. I'm going to do this the right way. And people don't have to email you because you can like literally pick it up and read the ingredients.
Sure.
And every ingredient's there. But I think as consumers, especially in the health and biohacking space, it would be smart of us to really just start to push these companies because the consumer demand is going to be what creates change, right? As we all become educated from listening to incredible podcasts like The Lifestylist, and we start to learn about some of these nuances. Again, you know, we try to not be too neurotic and freaked out about it all because, you know, we're all going to die. You know, that's the thing I like to remind myself. It's like, I don't care how well you live, how perfect you live. Life has a 100% death rate. And so,
totally,
you know,
totally.
It's like always a balance to me of like not being too paranoid and constricted and uptight about everything. But if it comes to like a drink that I'm going to be drinking every day, it's not going to hurt to send an email and just say, hey, are you guys, you know, doing reverse osmosis? Because that's the only thing that's going to get fluoride out, for example, you know?
100%. 100%. And actually, we've gotten a ton of great customer feedback in that vein. And we used to have silica in our product, which I think that's kind of open for debate whether ingested silica is really that big of a deal. I would argue that it's probably not that big of a deal, especially like silica is insanely effective. You need just like, it'd be like the least thing we put in our product. But you know, one of the feedback we got was, hey, we don't like it. And so we were like, hey, well,
what was
whatever.
The purpose of having it in there to begin with?
Essential oils and nicotine are both liquids. So when you make a
tablet. Oh, you got to bind it to something.
Yeah, when you okay. make a tablet, it's, you're really not supposed to put liquids in it. So we've kind of broken the rules and that tableting is this really strange art that, you know, we manufacture this, our product ourselves, by the way. Like literally I helped install the equipment and I hand mix these formulas.
Really?
Oh yeah, I still do.
So yeah. It's not made in China?
Not made in China. No, we make it ourselves. So we're intimately familiar.
Where's your organization at? Where's the outfit?
Spokane, Washington.
Really?
Yep.
You guys make it up there?
Just make it there, yeah.
That's cool.
Yep, we got our facility there. And yeah, you know, it's been a wild ride, figuring out how to do all this stuff. It's pretty crazy, but it was a lot of fun. And in retrospect, a lot of it was kind of miraculous, but really cool to have it come together. And so we're like, well, whatever, let's test it without silica and figure out a way to do it. And actually, I think now we have an even better product. So
have you considered going into the gum space or doing, you know, like pouches or anything like that?
We've totally thought about doing pouches. We found a source of hemp-based fiber pouches. So that would totally be an avenue of doing it. And we are a small startup. We've been at this for only a little over a year. Pouch machines are not exactly
quick. It's only been a year, huh?
A little over a year.
Have you guys raised any capital or you
self-funded? Yeah, we raised some money to get started. And then, you know, we've totally like hustled to make it happen. Like long hours of figuring this stuff out ourselves and not paying a multi-million-dollar pharmaceutical consultant to dial it in for us. So been a lot of trial and error, super fun, super crazy. Definitely a lot of nights up to 3 a.m. just like trying to fix something. So if you haven't done a startup before, highly recommended. It will test you. So that's been awesome.
I have a lot of respect for people that, anyone that tries to start a business, it's never easy. But I especially respect people that start a product-based business, which I've never done. It's always just been education, service, et cetera, right? I mean, I've only had a couple businesses, this being one of them, but it's just information products, right? It's just like intellectual property. I sell these t-shirts, which by the way, you can get at lukestory.com. No, wait, no, what is it? No, lukestorymerch.com. This is one of my favorites. Born again and again and again and again. It's the first products I think I've ever had. Oh, I have my blue blocking glasses, but I don't make them, you know, and I don't make these shirts, right? I just hired a company to handle it all. But I always find that very daunting, the idea of, you know, developing a product and then manufacturing it and sitting on inventory.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's like such a liability, right? Because you have an idea and you don't really know if it's going to fly and you don't know necessarily how to nail the marketing, especially something like you're doing where, it's a niche product and you have to have warning labels and only adults can use it. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more red tape and legislative restriction involved
Absolutely.
In it. So
it is tricky.
I have a lot of respect for you, Dan.
thank you.
You're taking one for the team.
yeah. It's, you know, it's not been easy.
I bet.
But it's been awesome. We have a great team. My wife's amazing. She's super supportive and, you know, has tolerated my, you know, the ridiculously obsessive nature of startups. So that's been amazing that, you know, just have the right team and all that. So
cool, man.
It's all been.
Well, I want to let people know you can go to lukestory.com/knickknack, NICNAC, and you can save yourself a fat 10% off with the code Luke, lukestory.com/knickknack. And we'll put that in the show notes, you know, that you can click on your app and all that stuff. Where do you see yourself going in the future? Like 10 years from now, what's Knickknack going to be doing? Ooh,
good question. Well, I think it would be fun to expand into those products you mentioned. I think it'd be cool to do a gum. If people aren't aware of it, almost all gum is made of plastic. You know, that's
really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like basically.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. My understanding is that like almost all gums are basically like petrochemicals. So, because that's how you make it something that like, you can chew forever. Like that isn't something that's normal. So it'd be interesting to do something like a mastic gum based nicotine. It'd be interesting to have to do some experiments for sure. So that's something I want to look into. People love the pouches. So maybe we could get into the pouch space too. That'd be kind of fun.
What about IVs? For the high dose folks like us.
Yeah. We joke that we want to do a snortable.
Call it
Knickknack Snorties.
totally.
We won't be doing that. That's a joke.
Well, speaking of John LaRance, he makes this hoppe based spray, Zen spray. Which I was using a couple years ago and I started using it too much and it was problematic for me. It's pretty high dose, you know, it'll knock you on your ass too. So I think nicotine is great in moderation. Some of us like myself are a little more prone to habituation / maybe leaning into addiction. But I know a lot of people like you that just like are able to use it as a supplemental a cognitive enhancement tool, and there's no downside, you know, for people like that. And if you're someone who has a propensity toward addiction, it's like, well, we all have to take responsibility for ourselves and our decisions. And
for sure,
you know, you play around a little bit and you fuck around and find out.
As I say,
that was me in my long journey with nicotine. I was like, oh, I could probably smoke a cigar. Boom, I'm on 5 cigars a day. You know, it's just like, wow. But most people I know don't have that kind of tendency, you know. And I also look at it like, man, I have a pretty clean life. I'm super healthy. It's like, I got one little vice. I'm not going to kick my own ass about it too much. I find, you know, there's also like anything you have, do the consequences of whatever you're doing outweigh the benefits? And there's always that scale. And I
for
think
sure.
if we each apply a little self-honesty, and if you have the ability to be honest with yourself, you can go, ah, okay. I mean, jogging too much is bad for you, right?
Oh, it's yeah, like, of course.
There's always kind of a tipping point there with anything you do or any product you use where it can be good for you. And then past a certain point, maybe not.
Yeah. I've been thinking more about, you know, obviously lifespan was a big thing for biohacking, and then it turned into health span. And then for me, I've been thinking more about just, well, maybe we should throw that all out the window and just go for quality over quantity. And, you know, don't start a startup if you want to live a long time.
Yeah, totally.
Like I got more gray hairs now than I should. But I'm grateful for them. And, you know, it's like, it's almost like the search for meaning and doing the right thing over all else. And I have found that more profound, more rewarding, and, you know, certainly keeps me going when a lot of things are telling me not to. So I have found that, at least for me, to be the right balance, and I'm going to keep doing it. And yeah, I'm probably not going to be 100 years old, and that's okay.
Yeah, at least you'll be happy and live well.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for joining me, man. And thanks for your commitment to quality, transparency. I love having people on the show that are doing it right. It sets a standard, right, for other people that are creating products that are supposed to be healthy. There's so much stuff out there. I mean, if you go into like the Whole Foods vitamin section, it's like 80% of it is either totally ineffective and useless or toxic. So it's like,
or both.
Yeah. When I find something and I like you guys sent me some of the stuff, I read the label and I was like, damn, dude. Well done. Well played. No complaints. That my inner Karen has nothing to email you about.